This is The Allusionist, in which I, Helen Zaltzman, hear a lot from language about its homemade kombucha. Oh, SCOBY's an acronym, is it? And it's your yeasty son? Coming up in today's show is something that's red and white and annoying all over, in my highly subjective assessment. On with the show. Keep calm and carry on. Keep calm and carry on. Maybe you've seen it on mugs, on tea towels, on cushions, on phone cases, on t-shirts, on bags, on birthday cards. Maybe it's on your wall right now. Carry on. The 21st century enthusiasm for keep calm and carry on can be traced back to a second-hand bookshop in a restored railway station in Alnwick on the northeast coast of England. Barter Books is owned by Stuart Manley and his wife Mary.
So now we're talking 20 years ago now, in the year 2000. We get lots of books from auctions, and this particular box of books have been hanging around for some time because they're pretty rough-looking books.
Stuart went through the box. Most of the books ended up in the recycling.
But right at the bottom, folded up, was this little poster, Keep Calm and Carry On. And I immediately thought, wow, that's quite something.
The poster has a red background with the text in large white capital letters and a Tudor crown at the top. Allegedly, the red-white colour combination was inspired by the cover of Hitler's Mein Kampf. Stuart and Mary framed the poster and hung it on the wall of the bookshop beside the counter.
And the next thing we knew, people wanted to buy it. Well, I said, we weren't prepared to sell it. And I suggested making copies, but my wife was a bit of a purist. She said, no, it would cheapen the poster. So I actually had some copies made when she was away on holiday. when I showed her the sales figures, when she came back, she relented.
The reprinted posters were pretty popular with customers at the bookshop, but then, a few years later, the posters were featured in a Guardian article.
That's when it went mad. The entire shop staff was devoted to packing posters for the next month. And it was about 10,000 in a month. And we almost stopped the bookshop just to get the posters away. But that was the start of it. That's when it started going national, international, all over the world. It got so many things. I mean, it's not just the T-shirts and the mugs. There was a Keep Calm book, birthday cards, Christmas cards, so many things, even condoms.
Wow. I'm not sure that's the right message for that moment.
We were not responsible for the condoms.
Stuart and Mary don't even get royalties for any of the condoms. Someone else trademarked the slogan.
We never owned it. It was Crown copyright. It was out of copyright, but we never even attempted to take ownership of it.
Why didn't you try?
Well, it just seemed wrong to do so. It wasn't ours. We discovered it. Sorry, we rediscovered it, but it was never ours.
So Stuart is not responsible for most of the Keep Calm merch, nor all the variations on the theme.
One or two of them are actually quite witty, but most of them, frankly, are tiresome.
If I like any, which I don't, I think they're all bad. It's the ones like that that are just total non sequiturs, that just make no sense at all. I'm like, okay, fine. They're just nonsense.
Anything can happen after the end.
Keep calm and curry on. Keep calm and party on. Keep calm and kiss on. Keep calm and knit on. Keep calm and craft on. Keep calm and golf on. Keep calm and yoga on. Keep calm and prosecco on. The on is the next part to go. Keep calm and go shopping. Keep calm and play golf. Eat a cupcake, eat a cookie, eat pizza, make a cup of tea, drink coffee, drink wine. Keep calm and drink prosecco. And Merry Christmas. And don't forget to be awesome. And don't forget to BCC. And dance and love. Poodles and kill zombies and hug a tree and Gangnam Style and be original, that's a laugh, and be yourself and grow a moustache and stare into the void, then we lose the end. Keep calm, I'm a Scorpio. Keep calm, I'm a girl dad. Keep calm, I'm a good driver. Keep calm, it's your birthday. Keep calm, I'm an actuary.
Whatever you
Some of them don't even bother with the keep calm or the distinctive design. But when you see a riff on Keep Calm and Carry On, you know it. You just know it. Now, the 21st century popularity of Keep Calm and Carry On is perhaps surprising. It wasn't popular when it was first printed in 1939, a few weeks before the declaration of World War II. In fact, the posters were never even circulated.
The interesting thing with that is that nobody who actually fought in World War II could possibly have seen the Keep Calm and Carry On poster. So you have this constant thing of like, as we did in 1940, let's keep calm and carry on, the famous Blitz slogan of keep calm and carry on, which just simply would not have featured in any account of the Blitz, ever.
Owen Hatherley is the author of books including The Ministry of Nostalgia, about how the austerity of the past is resold as cute in modern times, as exemplified by a government poster from 1939.
So there were three posters that were made, which were freedom is in peril, defend it with all your might. Your courage, your cheerfulness, your resolution will bring us victory. And then there was the third one, which keep calm and carry on. All three are the same. They've got the crown at the top. They've got the same typeface. The way that they're kind of laid out, it's very, very simple.
These three posters were designed as part of a home publicity campaign from the Ministry of Information to reassure the populace in the event of the outbreak of war. Over the summer of 1939, a shortlist of 20 slogans was prepared by a publicity planning subcommittee. The Home Secretary Samuel Hoare chose three, of which two were widely circulated around Britain shortly after war broke out. Those being, freedom is in peril, defend it with all your might, and your courage, your cheerfulness, your resolution will bring us victory. But while as many as 2.5 million Keep Calm and Carry On posters were printed, they were held back until such time as Britain received heavy bombardment or gas attacks, which didn't materialise in 1939.
The first two were incredibly unpopular.
The first two were actually issued, and they got such a poor reception. There were stinging letters in the Times about how patronising, how un-British they were.
People didn't like those posters at all. They found them very, very patronising. They found the us and them in the poster really annoying. Your cheerfulness will bring us victory. There was a real kind of like you and us. And the freedom is in peril one, apparently people just didn't know what it meant. Because I think people ascribe a kind of political meaning to World War II that wasn't that obvious at the time. I think at the time a lot of people saw it as being a kind of rerun of the First World War. And only really when the concentration camps were liberated did a lot of people realise the magnitude of what they were actually fighting against.
The campaign was so unpopular that a month after the initial two designs were put up around the country, it was cancelled. The British public never was instructed to keep calm and carry on, and a few months later, nearly all of the posters were pulped.
It's interesting to think what might have happened if they put the Keep Calm one out first, because I think that would have always had resonance.
It's a bit more punchy as well than the other slogans.
Oh, they were a bit clunky, weren't they?
What do you think about the slogan itself? Does it make you calm?
Well, I've been around it too long, but we recognise just what the effect it is. But my flip answer to that is people bought it because it was cheaper than antidepressants. But it sort of is an antidepressant. And I mean, that's why originally when we had the first rush of orders, they were from doctors' surgeries, schools, all the places where people are working under pressure. It was quite noticeable that people just loved it to sort of give an alternative view to the high pressure they were working under.
Does being told to keep calm work?
I can think of so many ways why it doesn't work. The whole thing, we don't like being told how to feel anyway. So just being told how to feel is already a bad start.
Don't tell me I don't like being told how to feel, Jane.
You definitely don't like being told how to feel.
Welcome back to the show, Jane Gregory, clinical psychologist and cognitive behavioural therapist.
So both parts of that phrase, neither of them work, because to keep being anything, to keep being in any kind of state is impossible because our state naturally fluctuates. So to start with, if you're not in that state to begin with, you've already failed. It's impossible to win from there. And even if you are in that state, telling someone to stay in that state just puts pressure on them to do something that's not possible. So it automatically increases your stress just being told that you have to stay in a particular state. You can't keep calm unless you're already calm. You can't keep calm unless you're already calm. Again, telling someone how to feel is incredibly invalidating. So if they're not feeling calm, then it completely invalidates how they are feeling, which can then cause you to completely spiral because we don't have any control over how we feel. So if someone tells you you're feeling the wrong thing, then saying that something that you can't control about yourself is wrong makes you feel like there's something wrong with you deep down. And so that then leads to feeling embarrassed or ashamed of how you're feeling, which then creates a conflict between the different states in your body of whatever you were feeling plus the shame. And then in order to protect ourselves from feeling the shame, we start to get angry at whoever's told us we shouldn't be feeling that way, which protects us from feeling bad about ourselves, but then introduces a third layer of emotion. We might have been able to deal with just whatever the original primary emotion was, but now you've suddenly got a layer of shame on top of that and a layer of anger on top of that.
Being told to calm down as well seems only designed to inflame someone more.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, it's the implication that there's some kind of hysteria about them in the first place, and that their feelings are wrong and invalid, or that it puts the person who's saying it in this position of power, like, I am the person who says how things should feel. It's incredibly patronising.
Even if you are calm, if you encounter something telling you to keep calm, would that automatically make you suspect that something's up? And that you should not be calm.
Yeah, it's like being told not to panic. If you're not panicking, then suddenly you get suspicious and paranoid that there must be a reason that you should be panicking if someone's telling you not to. There must be a reason not to be calm if someone's telling you to stay calm. People don't give that instruction when people are automatically feeling calm.
Why do I think it's so annoying? I think it's the smugness of it. There's always a kind of wagging finger. You know, it always implies it's saying to someone else that you should keep calm and carry on. No, you shouldn't. Don't complain, you know, carry on, stiff upper lip. So there's that. And I think just also the completely kind of false version of history that it presents. To understand, you know, how we got here, it's a really, really bad way of, you know, it kind of throws you off course attempting to understand your own history and your own recent past.
I'm trying to work out who it was even intended for, because there are the people who weren't feeling calm and therefore they can't just magically feel calm. But even the people who are feeling calm will probably feel resentful at being told to do something they're already doing, or that's already their strategy, is to try and suppress their feelings and stay calm.
What a British thing to put up a poster advising to suppress feelings.
Yeah. Yeah, which that, again, as a strategy, that's also a terrible strategy to suppress your feelings. It doesn't actually help you to get on with things. Suppressing your feelings actually introduces stress into the situation because it takes a lot of energy to suppress your feelings. And so they've done studies on this where people who are trying to suppress their feelings are actually less functional and can focus less on what they're doing because it takes up so much energy trying not to feel something or trying not to express something that you're feeling.
That's me told.
I think it comes from this idea of like British like stoicism being this sort of like romantic notion or something, but even that isn't quite accurate because that comes from the Stoic philosophy, which wasn't actually about suppressing your emotions. It was about not letting your emotions influence your decisions. So you would still feel the emotions, but you wouldn't make decisions whilst you're in the midst of the intensity of that emotion. So the carry-on part would still fit with the Stoic philosophy, but it wouldn't be don't have feelings or keep calm. It would be have the feelings, but then carry on.
Also, if you're a citizen of a country that's at war, you can't really Stoic your way out of the danger that that imposes.
No, you do need to actually be on high alert and ready for things to happen. You need to be in that enhanced state in order to protect yourself and to be ready to act if action is needed. I think hope people recognise that it's a relic now. It's not an actual instruction. I think if people are reading it as a useful strategy, then they're setting themselves up for failure. If you think of keep calm as being a behavioural instruction rather than an emotional instruction. So you can still have the feelings, but sort of try and maintain a sense of calm on the outside. Maybe that's a little less invalidating.
I blame alliteration as well. I think that's another reason why it works.
Yes, that's a good point. That's certainly not true of your cheerfulness and your resolution, which is, you know, not very snappy.
There's too many criteria.
It's a snappy slogan. That's the thing.
Yeah. And I suppose it's fairly clear instructions, even though they are nonsense instructions.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Five words.
Whoever actually did it at the Ministry of Information knew what they were about.
But they were just ahead of their time.
Must have been infuriating, you know, kind of like, look, I've just given you this amazing slogan. One of the things that comes out in the books I've read about posters in the Ministry of Information is that the most popular slogan by far was "Go to it."
Eh?
Everyone loved "Go to it." It usually had like a picture of like someone rolling up their sleeves and going to something. Go to
it.
Oh. Everyone loved it. People at the time would have remembered "Go to it."
It sounds a bit more worky, which I can understand the appeal of.
Exactly.
Maybe we're just people are a lot more docile 70 years after, and they were ready to be patronised.
Well, I think people just weren't fighting an actual war.
Yeah. So, why do you think people are nostalgic for war?
I think largely because of the fact that they've not been in one. So you really had to have people who either remembered it as children and so didn't really understand it, or just didn't remember it at all, in order for it to be reclaimed as something fun.
File away your government-issued communications now, because in 70-odd years, your grandchildren might want to stick them on the fridge, next to their keep calm and play hover golf magnet.
And also, I'm just, this is petty, but I'm just amazed by the fact that it won't go away. Like, it must be the most successful meme in history. Like, it's been ubiquitous for 12 or 13 years. And in a kind of situation where memes change so thick and fast, to have something like that that just won't die and won't go away is incredible. And irritating.
Well, how did you feel about that?
Well, mixed. I mean, even now I'm actually quite proud that I was responsible for introducing to the world and what has become one of the first iconic images of the 21st century. I'm proud that I found it and started it all. You get a bit sick of the takeoffs, you know, the various versions of it. But nevertheless, overall, I think it's a good thing.
There's a particular thing which I really want to be on air. People keep sending me versions of the Keep Calm and Carry On poster.
Oh, no.
Different versions of it, different kind of motifs, different parodies of it. And I would like them all to stop doing it and never do it again. Like, usually about once a day in a bad week, I get one of these. It's like, please take it away. I never want to see it again.
Owen Hatherley is a writer and the cultural editor of Tribune magazine. He's also the author of books, including The Ministry of Nostalgia. Stuart Manley rediscovered the Keep Calm and Carry On poster at his bookshop Barter Books in Alnwick, Northumberland. Look it up at barterbooks.co.uk. Jane Gregory is a psychologist and therapist. You heard her before on the show in the episodes A Novel Remedy and Behave. And she's about to launch a new project about misophonia. That's where you can't stand the sounds of mouths. If that's something you deal with, sign up to learn more about it at soundslikemisophonia.com. Your randomly selected word from the dictionary today is velleity, noun, formal, a wish or inclination not strong enough to lead to action. Try using it in an email today. Or not, if the inclination is not strong enough to do that. This episode was produced by me, Helen Zaltzman. The music is by Martin Austwick of palebirdmusic.com. Thanks to Dawn Foster, Avery Truffleman, and Ian Steadman. You can find me at Allusionist Show on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. The other place to go for all Allusionist business, such as further information about every topic, a lexicon of each word covered on the show, episode transcripts, and the full dictionary entries for the randomly selected words, etc., is the show's forever home, theallusionist.org.